I'm Stephanie Beaumont, and this is Seen, Be Seen, and Heard. Rolling towards our ninth season of celebrating the four Atlantic provinces here on Cove FM, where with each broadcast, I want to bring you just a little bit closer to some of the amazing personalities that make up this corner of the planet. They may be native to Nova Scotia or New Brunswick, Prince Edward Island or Newfoundland and Labrador, or they may be kindred spirits who simply adore living and working in Atlantic Canada. The only requirement here is that you're willing to raise the fun flag and wave it in salute of Canada's awesome East Coast. And of course, when it comes to celebrating the region, the team behind the Atlantic International Film Festival sure know how to do it upright. Indeed, it's our annual tradition here on the show to bring you the inside scoop on all the fantastic films, post-screening events, gala parties, and everything awesome on the go when the Atlantic International Film Festival happens in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Set to roll this year, September 16th through the 23rd. There you can join movie makers and industry shakers for 8 days filled with incredible panels and presentations, a stellar slate of special guests, and of course, a phenomenal array of remarkable movies from around the world and right here on Canada's East Coast, including two remarkable documentaries about two legendary East Coast personalities. Coming up later in the show, we'll connect with award-winning filmmaker Justin Sims to discuss his latest work about a CODCO co-creator called Smash and Grab, the rebel lens of Mike Jones. Plus, we'll chat with comic book creator turned first-time director Mike Feehan to hear all about how he came to co-star in Captain Newfoundland, a movie about NL broadcast giant Jeff Sterling. But what say we kick things off with the festival's director of programming for the rundown on this year's lineup? Here's my telephone conversation with the one and only Lisa Holler. Well, I mean, I always think to get any seconds with this woman at any point of the year, because she's always busy, is crazy. But to do it just days away from the 2026 Atlantic International Film Festival is a miracle. She's Lisa Holler, the director of programming. How are you now?
I'm great. Thanks so much for taking the time to chat.
Well, and that now as I was asking that question, I was thinking the majority of your work is done. You can sit back and relax. Hey, stop talking to people like me.
Yeah, no, I mean, we are locked and ready. So we've watched films for a lot of months and chose the best ones that we think will be interesting for Atlantic audiences. And now we're just gearing up for the day of.
Oh, it's so exciting. And now I've looked at the math. It's over 100 films, right, Lisa?
That's right, yeah. So just over 60 features and then 7 programs of short films this year.
Wow. And a real spectrum. As always, I think, and I could be wrong, the goal is to really capture something for everyone with the emphasis on Atlantic filmmakers. And this year, it seems like there's sort of a spotlight on really interesting characters.
Yeah, that's right. We're really proud of the program this year. So it consists of a diverse lineup of films from Canada and around the world with exactly that, a focus on spotlighting and elevating talent from the Atlantic region. And so it offers an opportunity for audiences to see the most anticipated titles of the year and to kind of represent a diverse range of global and local perspectives as well as genres. And it's a really exciting year because over half of the titles chosen, 66%, are Canadian, and over almost 35% of the films are from Atlantic region, including 14 feature films this year, which is incredible. And we're really excited to celebrate all of these films and welcome audiences from across Canada and the Maritime provinces to Halifax. So yes, there's a lot of different stories, but you're right. There are definitely stories that highlight some iconic people throughout the program.
Which is awesome. Okay, now, so the festival itself runs from the 16th to the 23rd, and with that many films, it's daunting, not only to put together, I would imagine, for yourself, but for the average moviegoer with that much selection. It's tricky, and I love what you've done this year in terms of being able to navigate the festival.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we try to make it as easy as possible for people to find and discover the films that they are interested in. And so there's different categories for the films. There's 8 categories, and we have lots of tags, so thematic tags or, you know, places. Like if you want to find something from Nova Scotia or if you want to find something from Newfoundland, you can click the little tags on our website and all of those films will pop up. Or if you're looking for a drama or a comedy or whatever it is, we really try to make it as easy as possible to search and find those films.
It's awesome. Also, like female directors, and you know, you can be warned about scary ones, which is not my genre. And there's lots of romance and certainly thrillers and just so much selection, which I love. Now, I'd love to start with the opening night because that's always a big decision, Lisa, I'm guessing, because it sort of sets the tone and you're looking for something that's going to tick a lot of boxes and fill the seats, if you will. How did you choose your opening night selection this year?
Opening night, you're right, it kind of kicks off our festival. It's the only film screening on the first day of the festival, so Wednesday, September 16th. And this year, we're really, really proud and excited to showcase a world premiere. So this is the first time any public audiences will see this film in the world, and it's a co-production between Canada, Nova Scotia specifically, and Switzerland, and it's been in the works for many years, and it's called 111 Echoes from Halifax, and it's a really, really special film. It tells the aftermath of the Swissair Flight 111 that happened just off the coast of Peggy's Cove in 1998, and it is, you know, it's a sad film, but it's not a disaster film. It's instead a story about the ripple effects that tragedy leaves in its wake. So it's about grief, resilience, human connection, and finding meaning after loss. It weaves a number of stories from either first responders or those families that are connected to the tragedy and how they connect to one another and create connections to each other. It's really beautifully done. It has a local producer, and much of it was filmed on the East Coast in Peggy's Cove, and it's gorgeous, and it's really sensitively done, and of course, I think it will resonate really strongly with audiences here in the East Coast where the tragedy happened. And we're going to be pairing this film with two panels, one for our co-production, co-financing market called Eighth Partners that is going to dig deep into the co-production aspects of the film, and then one for the general public that really will be moderated by an esteemed journalist, Normalee McLeod, who was one of the first TV journalists on live air from Peggy's Cove in the wake of the crash, earning CBC News a Gemini Award for Best Live Coverage. So she'll be moderating a talk with the team about the making of the film, and I think she'll bring a really great sensitivity towards that conversation. And that's free for everyone, and we'll have another screening on the weekend for as many people in the community to take a look at this film. Really, really important work, really amazing. So thrilled to be showing it. So for us, it was very clear from as soon as we knew this film was going to be ready and we saw it that this would be one that would be a huge highlight. It's an extraordinary accomplishment and an indication of the strength and international relationships that our filmmakers here can have while making incredible stories from the East Coast. So highly, highly recommend 111 Echoes from Halifax.
There you go. And I must say, our studios are based here in Hubbards, Nova Scotia, and having done projects and things like that out in Blandford and very close to, you know, it's like it was yesterday for so many people. So this will be not only an opportunity to see it from a number of different perspectives, but in some ways, a little bit of closure too, I would imagine, Lisa.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. We will be having a trauma response representative at the cinema to talk to anyone following the film screenings to make sure that they feel supported. You know, it is a difficult film, especially for those first responders or anyone that was connected to the events on the ground not too long ago. So really, I think it will offer closure. It's not 100% real, but it is based on the events that are, of course, true.
There you go.
It's a drama, of course. But yeah, I think it will be, it's for everyone, really, to see and kind of understand these stories of connection.
That's so great. Well, you talk about connection and you mentioned, you know, the fact that there's international associations with this. Certainly the selection of films, you've got everything. And I'll just quickly roll to the closing night gala and then I'll circle back to the Atlantic Gala, which I can't wait to talk to you about. But how did you pick this movie for the last one? And I don't want to say it wrong. It's Ha Chan, Shake Your Booty?
Yeah, so this film is dazzling. It's the winner of the Directing Award for U.S. Dramatic at this year's Sundance Film Festival. So already have some high achievement in other film festivals so far this year. And it is by a filmmaker named Joseph Kabuta Latika. set from the USA. And it's a really imaginative approach with like lush visuals and gorgeous music. It's set in the Tokyo ballroom dance scene, and it stars Oscar nominee Rinko Kikuchi as this character Haro, who returns to ballroom dance after a tragedy in her life. And it's really playful. It's like a buoyant drama about her finding herself again in a time of grief. And yeah, I think it's beautifully done, and it's got a lot of fun aspects with the approach to the subject matter. So definitely think it's an audience favorite coming off of Sundance Award, and I think a lot of people are going to really enjoy this film as a final touch point for the festival.
There you go. So two great bookends and a whole bunch of amazing things in between. You mentioned the shorts off the top, and that's a great portion of the programming. And I love the fact that it allows so many voices to be heard, so many pictures to be screened, and so many filmmakers to be celebrated.
Yeah, I can talk about shorts all day. So we expanded the shorts programs to 7 this year, and each shorts program is like a playlist. So it includes a little bit of everything. There's drama, documentary, animation from Canada and around the world in each program. And so they don't have a theme, but they will each play like a beautiful playlist and take you through emotions throughout the 90 some minutes. And I always recommend this for anyone who's interested in really seeking and discovering emerging talent from around the world. Highly, highly recommend. There is one that is dedicated solely to filmmakers from the East Coast, and that's called the Real East Coast Gala. That happens on our Sunday evening. And so there's a really lovely cross-section from filmmakers across the entire Atlantic region in this specific program, which I would also, of course, highly recommend. But yeah, I think it's an opportunity to see filmmakers who are really taking risks. They're innovative. They're surprising. You can, you know, see something that is an incredible story in the span of 8 minutes.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend this. And there's, you know, some amazing stories from our region too, including The Bookstore That Never Sleeps by Justin Zoris. That's going to be closing out our gala screening. And it's a profile on a Lunenburg bookstore, Elizabeth Books, and its owner, Chris Webb, that is only open at night. And it's a beautiful human story at its core, and highlights the South Shore community really nicely. We're also showing a short that's kind of a mid-length short, which isn't super typical for us.
Define mid-length for anyone playing the home game, because shorts are typically, they have to be under a certain amount of minutes. Is that right, Lisa?
That's right. Yeah. So a short film is anything 60 minutes or less.
Oh, 60?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So
that seems long.
Programs are like from 2 minutes to, you know, maybe 27 minutes, generally speaking.
Yes.
So they do kind of end on that side, so we can have a nice, well-rounded program of 6 or 7 short films. But then there's 2 that are playing, and they're both 52 minutes, and we're pairing those together because they were just outstanding. And one is called Being Still. It's by director Joe Bender and Scott Munn, and it features 4 analog photographers in Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, and their practice and their obsession with the dying art and making genuine connections with others. So it's a really quiet, lovely representation, both of the subjects and the art form, and really showcases the beauty of the East Coast as well. So definitely wanted to highlight.
It's so exciting. Okay. Now, you mentioned normally McLeod's workshop. So that's one component, the workshops. But even just watching the films, in so many instances, there'll be people who are either the director or some stars. There'll be people that, you know, that post-show Q&A, right, for a lot of the movies, Lisa?
Yeah, absolutely. So much of what we do is highlight the filmmakers here. And we try to get as many of them to attend the festival as we can. And so we're really excited to be welcoming over 100 guests this year from the features and the shorts programs, from directors, producers, cast members, to be in attendance for the film screenings and to have the opportunity to discuss questions that the audiences have following each screening. So definitely something that elevates the film festival experience from a regular screening at, you know, any other time of the year. So here we have a special guest. You can immediately ask them your question about how they made the film, or, you know, how casting worked, or what their experience was shooting in the location they shot in, whatever it is.
It's so great.
There's always an opportunity to talk directly with the filmmakers. And then, there are those panels over the weekend on Saturday this year. They take place in cinema, just at Cineplex Park Lane, and they're all free. So if you want to learn a little bit more about some of our films and have a deeper dive, there's these moderated panels that I would highly recommend. It's just anyone can come in and take a seat and listen to the filmmakers and the cast members talk about their art.
That's wonderful. And of course, there's the parties, the social aspect. I mean,
yes, we have parties and events. And yeah, there's so much more, of course. The movies are the central stars, but there's lots of opportunities for people to connect and network and celebrate. And it's a nice 8-day full event.
It's so exciting. Now, we just had Susan Kent on last week, and we do need to give props to the Atlantic Gala this year. What an extraordinary film from a phenomenal lady.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited to have her here at the festival. So at the Atlantic International Film Festival this year, our Atlantic Gala is The Snake, which is a debut by Jenna McMillan from PEI, of course. It was written and stars incredible comedian Susan Kent. It premiered earlier this year at South by Southwest, where she was given an award, a jury nod for her performance. And we are excited to celebrate the success of the film and to bring it home at our festival. It is a dark comedy. Susan really is outstanding in it. And we will have a lot of the cast here as well to have a really vibrant Q&A and panel associated with this film.
And party to follow. Okay, now listen, I'm going to lose you, and I don't want to. I want to say two things. Well, actually three. One is congratulations on such an extraordinary assortment. Two is thank you for including I Play Rocky, which is a movie I cannot wait to see. Now, just tell me how that came into your assortment. Are you a Rocky fan, first of all?
I mean, who isn't? It's really exciting. This one just got added. So we've been tracking this for a long time, and they just confirmed last week that this is the main edition. So we're really excited to bring I Play Rocky to the festival. It's an extraordinary, really entertaining drama that I think audiences will adore.
Oh, I cannot wait. I'm so excited. My ringtone is the Rocky theme, so that's how obsessed I am. But Lisa, and here's my very last question to you. And this, again, putting you on the spot. But if you could just, you know, other than the ones we've talked about, if you could just pick one movie that you think maybe no one's heard of, but everyone should see in the assortment, is there one you could recommend?
One movie?
A sleeper, maybe. Maybe one that's just like below the radar, but oh my goodness, it blew you away.
There are just so many. I think if you're looking for a documentary, The Ultra Runner is an incredible one about this insane runner. And it mixes both documentary and kind of thriller reenactments, which I think will look incredible on the big screen. It's an extreme ultramarathon champion who kind of turns his life around after serving time in a high security prison.
Wow.
And I think it's a standout this year when it comes to documentary, alongside The Last Days of April, a local film by Lee Wright and Megan Wright that premiered at Hot Docs. And I think, you know, I think Nina Rosa is really beautiful as well as Geneviève Deluc-Dessel's drama that, yeah, I think is a must-see. And
I'm so mean. It's like Sophie's Choice, right? How could I do this to you?
Yeah, Lisa, it's a hard one.
Yeah,
there's so many.
It's so exciting. And I'm grateful that you've got a wonderful team working behind the scenes. Shout outs to everybody, right? Like the fabric, if you will, that pull it all together.
Yeah, I know. We have an incredible team here at the Atlantic International Film Festival that have really been so dedicated to ensuring that audiences have an incredible experience. And we're really thrilled to welcome everyone here very soon.
Oh, I'm so excited. Well, congratulations to all the team and to you, Lisa Holler, for pulling together the most extraordinary lineup of films. We'll look forward to seeing everybody in the city of Halifax, September 16th to 23rd. We'll see you at the movies.
Thank you so much.
Time to stop down for our first commercial break here on Cove FM. But when our Atlantic International Film Festival special continues, we'll shine the spotlight on two of this year's featured directors. We'll catch up to veteran filmmaker Justin Sims to celebrate his latest documentary, Smash and Grab, The Rebel Lens of Mike Jones. And when we return, we'll connect with first-time director Mike Feehan to get the scoop on his cinematic salute to media mogul Captain Newfoundland, Jeff Sterling. We'll be right back. Mm-hmm. Welcome back to See and Be Seen and Heard here on Cove FM as we continue our celebration of the 2026 Atlantic International Film Festival, set to roll in Halifax from September 16th through the 23rd, complete with the who's who from the industry here on the East Coast, along with special guests from across the country and around the world, too. There'll be workshops and parties and more than 100 films screening for your enjoyment. One of those productions will be from an award-winning comic book creator, graphic designer, and storyboard artist, Mike Feehan, who's worked with everyone from DC Comics to Netflix. And no, it's not an animated production exactly, although his creations can be found throughout the film. No, his first foray with the title director is at the helm alongside Jamie Miller for Captain Newfoundland, a thrill ride of a documentary about media mogul, athlete, creator of the psychedelic superhero Captain Newfoundland, and an activist against his home province joining Confederation, Mr. Jeff Sterling. Well, I caught up with Mike to get the full scoop on his debut doc and so much more. Here's that call. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Mike Feehan. How are you?
I am great. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Well, I tell ya, I'm still tripping. I don't know if it's cool for me to say that, but what a wild ride Captain Newfoundland was.
Oh, that's great to hear that, because that is exactly what our intention was for the film.
Well, it's so funny, too, because you never really know. First of all, documentaries, you're looking for the truth. You're looking for, you know, a certain amount of reporting and, you know, accuracy and whatnot. But when it comes to a character like Jeff Sterling, it's a pretty wild ride.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I think that even before we really get into everything about Jeff Sterling and Captain Newfoundland, like, the thing we were trying to, in some ways, take inspiration from was the feeling that we would get turning on this station, MTV, in the middle of the night. And you didn't really know what you were in for. So to be doing a documentary about, like, a Canadian businessman, you may go in with certain expectations.
Right.
And we hope we kind of subverted them and take audiences on a wild ride, which is what it was like turning on a local news station and never knowing what you were going to see.
Indeed. Well, now my folks retired in Holyrood. Mom was from St. John's.
Wow.
So I got NTV certainly after those years, but it was a different offering. And appreciably, you know, instead of commercials, there were videos at that time. But, you know, seeing the footage back in the day and recognizing the fact that something I didn't know, that it was the very first 24-hour TV station in the world is remarkable, but the impact it had on the culture of Newfoundland can't be overstated, Mike.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's something that was part of the inspiration of why we wanted to make the film. You know, MTV is a local TV station, which a lot of places have.
Right.
But the way it has been embraced, not just by, you know, the general public as the local broadcaster, but in a niche or the communities or subcultures, you know, punk kids, artists, musicians, writers, counterculture people really have embraced NTV because it feels very much our own thing. And I think part of that is because it has a history of being quite unusual at times. And I think people just embrace that as part of the Newfoundland cultural identity. And I think that was just an interesting thing. I mean, you see it in the film, and this isn't too much of a giving anything away, but, like, we go to a punk show, and there are people at this punk show, you know, kids in their early 20s, teenagers, and they're wearing NTV merch.
Right.
And there's NTV-themed skateboards.
Yeah.
So it's wild, the impact that it's had.
Indeed. Now, I mentioned it in the preamble that you're a world-renowned comic book artist and illustrator and things like that. But this is your first foray into filmmaking, and to have a world premiere of your documentary at the Atlantic International Film Festival. Are you still sort of in the pinch me mode, Mike?
Very much so. This has been really a dream come true for me for so many different reasons. Like, I, as you said, I'm a comic book artist. I'm also a storyboard artist. So I've had my toes in the film industry for a long time.
Yes.
But being on this side of things and getting to be in the director chair, along with my far more experienced, talented, award-winning co-director, Jamie Miller, like, it felt like a bunch of extremely talented, lovely people were like, hey, come along on this ride for us. But it's been amazing. And also just because as a fan of Jeff Sterling, of Captain Newfoundland, of being so fascinated by the amount of lore and backstory and history with this stuff, I was independently researching it for the last, like, you know, 15 to 20 years.
Wow.
As a hobby, I'd be collecting issues of the Newfoundland Herald. I'd be staying up late and recording on TV. I would go, like, lurk around the station and look at the murals on the walls. Like,
right.
I was so fascinated by this stuff to the point where I had friends saying to me, you know, you probably know more about Jeff Sterling than anyone I know. You should make a documentary.
Wow.
People kept saying that, and eventually I just talked to the right people who, allowed to make this happen and went on this journey with me, so it's been great.
There you go. And you're probably in the most creative corner of the planet, certainly the country, in Newfoundland, and what an amazing fabric of creative forces that work behind the scenes. I always make a point of looking at the credits and seeing the team that worked alongside with you, but also, and it shouldn't be understated, you also kind of co-star in this documentary. So how was that part for you?
Yeah, that I will, as the rest of the team knows, I'm the first to say that it was not my idea to put myself in the film. I'm not particularly an extrovert or someone who's particularly comfortable being on camera. But
right.
It was, you know, it was an idea of, if we wanted to answer the question, why had Jeff Sterling, Captain Newfoundland, NTV, the rest of this stuff connect with artists and creative types and, you know, people on the punk scene and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The question also was, as someone who comes from that background, who grew up playing in punk bands, who is an artist, why did I want to make this film?
And right.
Why have I been so interested in it? So it made sense to kind of be able to try to answer that question myself, as well as be a way in for the audience of just like, here's some random guy who grew up in Newfoundland, and here's what it was like when he saw this stuff.
Right.
And here's the journey that it led him on. And yeah, so I think that it was a narrative choice that I hope makes sense.
Oh, for sure. It's very fun. I loved it. And also, I loved the roster of people that you interviewed. And again, it speaks to the impact it had on so many people. You know, Mark Critch and Tom Power and the incomparable Danny Williams. I mean, how did you get all these people to talk on camera? Was that a hard deal, or do you just sort of roll with all those kids anyway?
It was really surprisingly easy. It was getting the schedules lined up took a little bit of time, but really, everyone that we asked was just like, you want me to talk about Jeff Sterling? Of course. Like, they just were so excited to do it and so excited to talk about Jeff Sterling. Because, I mean, part of the, I think, reason that we wanted to make this documentary and the reason why it's kind of like getting some buzz locally is because almost everyone in Newfoundland has a Jeff Sterling story, has heard a Jeff Sterling story. And it's this thing that you could, you know, talk to people at parties about, and all these urban legends and myths, and no one has actually fully made a documentary about him yet. So I think people are just waiting for it to happen, and by some cosmic stroke of whatever, like, we got to do this, and so people were just so eager to share their stories and talk about their fascination with Jeff Sterling.
Well, I'll tell you, I have to ask you this question, and I hope it's not too personal, but were you able to meditate?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm still not the best at it.
Okay.
But I do actually, try to meditate every day.
Wow. Because of this, or had you done it before, Mike?
I had been doing it before.
Okay.
But I will say that, like, the few years that we've been working on this film has been, like, a journey, transformative kind of journey for me. And I really went down a lot of rabbit holes and taking inspiration from Jeff Sterling and Scott Sterling. And meditating is part of my daily practice now. And
wow.
I try to use the mantra that Scott Sterling teaches me in the film. So that is, like, in one way that my meditation has changed.
There you go. Oh, that's so cool. Okay, and now to me, and you tell me if I'm crazy for saying this, I believe the hardest thing about making this movie would have been getting it down to 94 minutes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's so much stuff in terms of archival material, interviews that we filmed. I mean, everyone we talked to, we probably talked to for about 2 hours. And, you know, everyone who's in the film has only probably got a couple of minutes at most. So many great interviews, so many great stories.
Should we give a shout out to your editor?
I will absolutely shout out Peter Dennis.
There you go.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I could spend an hour talking about how great Peter is. And, like, he's been, like, a miracle and joy to work with. We had so much footage, so much interviews. And we're like, here's the vibe. Here's what we want. you know, can you do this? And he would always give us back what we wanted, sometimes give us things that we didn't even know we wanted that was perfect. And he came into the project towards the end and just got the vibe, nailed it, and has just been, you know, did everything we asked, went above and beyond, and is also just like the nicest, coolest dude.
So great. I congratulate you. I know you're doing the scene, you're doing the circuit. I know you'll be celebrated wholeheartedly when Captain Newfoundland screens here in Halifax during the Atlantic International Film Festival. I only have one more question, Mike Feehan, and that is this the first of many films you'll be doing, or what's next?
I certainly hope so. This was a huge joy for me, and
yes,
such a dream come true. So if this leads to something else, I'm very happy to do it. I'm happy to do anything more to do with Captain Newfoundland, because I love this stuff, and I've kind of become a bit of like the Captain Newfoundland guy around town.
Yeah.
I've designed these t-shirts and skateboards and stuff, so
right,
there's more to come for that. And also just this team, Jamie Miller, John O'Hunter, Sam Sutherland, Justin Taylor, Peter Dennis, like everyone who worked on this film, I would love to work with them again. So if any opportunity comes up, I just had to shout out the whole team, because they're great, and this whole experience incredible.
That's awesome. And I hope you don't mind me singling out your cinematographer, Troy Marr, who's an old pal of mine, and I love seeing his name on the big screen. But capturing that magic must have been quite an interesting feat as well.
Yeah, I met Troy working on this film. Jamie had worked with him previously, and a wizard. Like, everything was incredible, and just watching him work on the fly, and we had all these, there was a time where like we were interviewing someone and the power went out, and Troy just immediately adapted and made everything look amazing. And as well, his drone footage, and watching him pilot a drone and getting these incredible shots of the rocks and the ocean. Such a cool guy, such a talented guy. So it was amazing.
Awesome. What a team. Go team. And go Mike Feehan. Congratulations to you, sir. And to everyone who worked on Captain Newfoundland. It's a wonderful film. I encourage everybody to see it. And certainly grab Mike Feehan's work wherever you can. Hey, support comic book creation.
Hell yeah. Thank you.
Now, Mike, we've got to stop down for a commercial break right now. I wondered, with a movie this, you know, all about creativity in all aspects of it, the impact of NTV and Jeff Sterling on the fabric of Newfoundland, there were a great number of musical notes from, you know, the Beatles to that punk band you mentioned. But there's also some pretty cool soundtrack tunes in there. And I wondered if we could play one of them heading to our break.
Yeah, I would love if you played Song Higher by Borealis, which is featured in our film. They're an underrated Newfoundland band from the 1970s, so that'd be great.
Right on. All right. Congratulations again, Mike, and we'll see you at the festival.
Thank you so much.
Be sure to grab your tickets to see Mike Feehan's film Captain Newfoundland when it screens at the Atlantic International Film Festival on Thursday, September the 17th. I'm telling you what, you're going to love it. Still ahead on CNBC Seen and Heard, we'll connect with filmmaker Justin Sims to get the scoop on his latest work, the show-stopping Smash and Grab. We'll be right back after the break, and to take us there, here's NL's own Borealis with Higher on Cove FM.
I see the colors all around my room. I see some pictures, but I know not of whom. Ranging
Welcome back to Seen, Be Seen, and Heard here on Cove FM, our annual celebration of the 2026 Atlantic International Film Festival continues. Well, it's happening here in Halifax from September the 16th through the 23rd, and it's such an incredible opportunity to meet the East Coast creators behind the marvelous movies we watch. In fact, that's exactly where I first met our next filmmaker in the spotlight, Mr. Justin Sims. Truth be told, that was a decade ago, and oh my goodness, he's been busy in all those years since. I'm so pleased today to be shining the spotlight on his delightfully funny and moving documentary about Newfoundland legend and Cod Cove's secret weapon entitled Smash and Grab, The Rebel Lens of Mike Jones. Here's my telephone conversation with the wonderful Justin Sims. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as the kids say, it's been a minute, but I can't wait to chat with this fella about his brand new film, Smash and Grab, The Rebel Lens of Mike Jones. He's the one and only Justin Sims. How are you?
Hello, Stephanie. I am well. How about yourself?
Well, I'm great. I never like to do math, especially when it involves the passage of time. But I did go back, and the last time you and I chatted was indeed at the Atlantic International Film Festival, but a good many years ago, in celebration of a wonderful biography you did for Danny Williams called Danny. And I mean, does that seem like a minute ago? Or I know you've jammed in a whole lot of work.
Oh, yeah. Well, shortly after we made that film, actually, is when we had our son, who just turned 10. So that might have a lot to do with why it's been so long.
Oh, well, I can tell from your IMDb page, you've let no grass grow, my friend. There's been a whole lot of work on a whole lot of projects. And I can't imagine, you had said, you and William D. McGilvery at the time, that Danny was a puzzle and how many elements of his life. But I would imagine putting together this picture in a concise running format for Mike Jones was equally challenging?
Oh, yeah. I would say even more so.
Okay.
You know, because really in Danny, we were looking at a very kind of specific era in time.
Yes.
Whereas this new film, it kind of encompasses a much larger period. We talk about Confederation and very earliest kind of beginnings of what came to be known as the Newfoundland Renaissance, which was kind of started in the mid-70s and was really a reaction to the end of the Smallwood years.
Right.
So it was definitely a much larger puzzle.
Indeed. Okay, now I hardly know where to begin because there are so many jumping off points. But how about say, because, and here's the other side of it. It's fair to say that Mike Jones was a pivotal character in Newfoundland history, specifically culturally, but also when it comes to so many creative minds on the island, right, Justin?
Yes. I mean, Mike really got his start by filming the comedy troupe Cod Cove, which of course went on to become very well known.
Legendary.
Yeah, and it sort of was the precursor to This Hour Has 22 Minutes and whatnot. So
yes.
When Mike kind of picked up a camera, I think, in 1975, and he started shooting Cod Cove. We're very young at the time.
Like yes.
When you see the material, it's really
unreal. Kathy Jones was 15. Can you believe
it? They're all babies.
Oh, my
God. They're all babies.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Mike and Cod Cove really kind of came up together in a way. And certainly Cod Cove were a major driver of the Newfoundland Renaissance in terms of pushing back on the perception of Newfoundland that existed at the time, that we were the poor cousin of Canada and that we were somehow unworthy.
Yes.
And so as Cod Cove kind of refined their material and kind of found their satirical voice, Mike was there with a camera on his shoulder filming it all. And at the time in 1975, Mike was wanting to make a documentary film about Cod Cove. And he wanted to call it the Cod Cove Document. And he shot reams of stuff, like hours and hours and hours of stuff. And unfortunately, life kind of took over. And so he never really did anything with all this material. And it essentially sat in his basement for decades.
Isn't that amazing?
And largely through the efforts of Mike's brother, Andy, who of course is a seminal member of Calico.
Indeed.
And along with Mike's family, they really became kind of archival detectives after Mike passed away.
Yes.
And were able to sort of gather up all the film stock and all of the sound. And that's when the National Film Board became involved and they transferred all of the film to video.
And so how did you hook up with this project then? Were you, it's funny, I'm not a detective by any means, but I do love to see who did what and who worked on what. And I didn't realize that Mike had been on camera as much, you know, when you go back, he seemed to be kind of behind the scenes, or at least he doesn't have the prominence, if you will, that Kathy and Andy do, but that he was in a William D. McGilvery film.
Yes.
And so I was
really
like,
really amazing film.
Maybe that's how Justin got involved, but I would imagine, obviously, he's a character and a personality and a legend, as I said, in Newfoundland, the landscape, if you will. So you are aware of him, but who tagged Justin Sims to be the director of this amazing movie?
Well, became a part of this project. Originally, I was going to be the editor, and my great friend Deanne Foley was the original director. But she's got an amazing career, so she had to step away for the amount of a time commitment that this would require. So Lane and Jill, the producers, asked me if I wanted to take over, and I said I would love to.
Wow.
And that was before we actually shot anything, so it was very early in the game.
Serendipity takes a hand, hey, Justin? Because you did an extraordinary job.
It's been a wonderful project and a wonderful to work side by side with Andy, who, of course, has like a lot of skin in the game. And, I mean, he really originated the project because he felt that his brother, Mike, had kind of been forgotten. And that this new kind of generation coming up really hadn't heard of his work, had never heard of the adventure of Faustus Goodgood, which is, of course, Mike's Meg Mopus.
Indeed.
And, you know, he wanted to try to reverse that and try to reintroduce Mike and the whole mindset that Mike made his work with. He wanted to reintroduce it, so I was thrilled to be able to contribute.
That's so great. So now, you know, we talk about the puzzles, and it's one thing when you write a screenplay and, you know, you're following for all intents and purposes an order of scenes and the storyline, etc. But, you know, talking about the insurmountable storyline and, if you will, of anyone's life, most especially Mike Jones, it must have been challenging. But I do see here, and I was kind of surprised that there was another editor attached. And so did you have Andrew McCormick then step in when you took over the director role?
Yes.
Okay. So you're working as a team then. And I would imagine as any great director, you're right in there with it.
Oh, yes. He and I have spent many, many hours with each other poring over the edit. Yeah, absolutely. And he and I have actually worked. He's edited all of my documentary films. So he's a real creative partner of mine.
Oh, that's
and,
so great.
He really, like the amount of material that he had to work with on this movie was really overwhelming at times. And, you know, it's just really a testament to his genius and talent, what you see here.
That's so great. Now, you're going to be on stage for the Q&A when the movie screens for the Atlantic International Film Festival. It's got a Monday 7 p.m. screening. You're going to be joined by Lynn and Jill, your producers, as you mentioned. Andrew will be there, too, to answer questions. And Kathy Jones and Andy will be there as well. So it's going to be Old Home Week. Now, all of us get to sit down and we're seeing a production. I mean, it's kind of, to quote Susan Kent from last week's interview, it's the turducken of reunions because it's a reunion and a reunion. But this film really does celebrate the collaborative spirit behind Codco and the career that Mike had. But certainly it's a team effort whenever it comes to anything. I would ask you only this one question. Is it everything you wanted, or did you have to leave a lot of things on the cutting room floor?
Well, I've been making documentaries long enough now that you always recently stuff on the cutting room floor kind of unavoidable.
Yes.
But certainly for this film in particular, you could almost make a whole other movie.
I bet.
What is not in it. We interviewed so many different people, and we've got so much rich archival material that we either knew that we had or that we unearthed over the course of the making of the film, that it's just a cavalcade, really, of like amazing material spanning close to, you know, 15 years. But I really like the film. I'm quite happy with it.
Oh, good.
I really learned a lot about all these characters and about the filmmaking tradition that exists in Newfoundland, which when I was a young guy coming up, like when I was in my teens or whatever, I really was not aware of it. Like, I had never heard of The Adventure of Faustus Pidgeot.
Oh, wow.
I had never heard of NIFCO. And so this was like, it was almost like a university course
in
Newfoundland culture of the early and mid 70s and 80s. So I learned so much that I'm so thankful that I learned. And it's quite something to kind of realize that you are a part of a continuum.
Yes.
And that there is a very important tradition of filmmaking in this province that's not only about entertainment value, but it's also about kind of defining what it is we bring to Canada as a province, like what we bring to the table. And I think it was really important, and I'm kind of endlessly inspired by it.
Oh, no doubt. Well, I've always said Newfoundland, it's the most phenomenal tapestry, if you will, of creativity and brilliance. And this movie celebrates it from start to finish. So congratulations. Congratulations, Justin Sims. I mean, I tell you, it's so great. I'll look forward to seeing you here when it screens in Halifax. And cheering on the entire team. I appreciate you making the time, sir.
Thank you, Stephanie, and all the best.
Oh, it's so great to connect with Justin after all this time. Be sure to catch his doc, Smash and Grab, The Rebel Lens of Mike Jones, when it screens as part of the 2026 Atlantic International Film Festival on Monday, September the 21st at 7 p.m. That wonderful Q&A, including Justin and his team, along with Kathy Jones and Andy too, will follow the screening. Oh, and if that weren't enough, in celebration of its 40th anniversary, a newly restored print of Mike Jones's magnum opus, The Adventures of Faustus Biggood, will enjoy a free screening at this year's festival on Tuesday, September the 22nd. Co-director and star Andy Jones will be in attendance, along with producer Mary Lynn Bernard. Now, as of our Wednesday broadcast, there were still tickets available for both screenings, but don't delay. Get your tickets today at AtlanticFilmFestival.ca. You can find the podcast version of this show, along with all of our other CNBC Seen and Heard episodes, available to stream and download now on iTunes via Apple Podcasts. And for all the show notes and links to this broadcast, you can head to my Omni site at StephanieBeaumont.com. There you'll discover our entire catalog of episodes for this show, along with all of our soundtrack episodes too. Thanks to Jason McDonald for our CNBC Seen and Heard theme music. Thanks to Lisa Holler, Mike Feehan, and Justin Sims for being my guests. And thanks to you for joining us today. Sure hope you will again next time here on Cove FM. I'm your host, Stephanie Beaumont. Be well till then.